Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover, and this is episode 47. Wow. vCenter Server Appliance. Let's talk about it. Here we go. Today, my guest is Mike Preston. How you doing, Mike?
Not too bad. How are you?
Hey, I am awesome. This is your first time on, and I'm very happy to hear that you're a longtime listener. That's great stuff. Mike, can you tell everyone a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what you do, and all that good stuff?
Sure. Yeah, well, my name is Mike Preston, and I work as a systems analyst for a public school district up here in the Great White North in Ontario, Canada. My role, basically, I'm responsible for a lot of things, but our VMware implementation is one of my main responsibilities. Online, I guess you can find me on Twitter at MWPreston, and basically I recently started a blog at MWPreston.net, and that's basically where I've been spending most of my spare time. So.
True. And I'll admit, I've interacted with you a lot on Twitter of late, primarily because of your really slick blog posts related to Veeam. So we definitely appreciate that. In fact, just today on Twitter, someone asked a question. I said, check with Mike. He's got a great post about it. So outstanding. Keep up the good work in the community. It's appreciated. Never enough time to do that all. We need more people like you.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
So, today we're going to talk about the vCenter Server Appliance, and I guess we'll just go ahead and call it VCSA at this point. You know, first look, I've taken a couple looks at it. I've installed it once, used it a little bit, read a little bit about it, namely the documentation and some of the config elements of it. So that's my experience. I'll start with that. Before I start jumping into my opinion, I'll turn it over to you, Mike. What's your experience with it?
Yeah, that's about the same as how I've delved into it. Basically, just installed it kind of in a workstation lab and just to see what it was all about and just get it up and running and have a look.
Yeah. I mean, and at that point, we got to also think about what's kind of the goal of this product, right? It's one of those things that I'm not the type, but plenty of people out there hate that vCenter runs on Windows. let alone the vSphere client, okay? So this is, you know, that first step to kind of address that, and that's put this server platform on a virtual appliance. I don't remember what Linux-based it is, but it is Linux-based.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, my first opinion was it's very 1.0-ish, okay? That's what I'll say at this point. There's quite a few limitations of what you can't do with it, but I like the idea. Okay, I really like the idea. So first opinion, what's your first opinion of the VCSA?
Yeah, well first off, I thought it was real easy to install. I mean, I think I had it up and going within about 10 minutes and had host into it. But yeah, the limitations, I mean, there is, I don't think you can get Update Manager with it unless you have a separate Windows box.
Well, and that's probably my biggest sticking point, okay, is Update Manager, you know, because I could live without IPv6. Don't worry about that. For the, what is it, 5 or 10 hosts or fewer, I can live with that, you know, if that's the supported config max, understood, no problems there. But Update Manager, now, I guess I owe it to myself to, you know, Update Manager is a separate product. Let's also start with that, right? So, you know, it's never going to be an element of the vCenter server. So would it be nice of us to see Update Manager as a virtual appliance? That might be the next logical step. By no means do I have that information as a future, but that would be cool. The alternative to Update Manager, and let's also remember, we're talking about the super small environment, right? Less than 5 or 10 hosts.
Yeah.
The alternative is to do it via command line.
Yeah.
Have you ever done vSphere updates via command line?
Yeah, I've applied different vids and stuff with the management assistant, the VIMA, that it's called. Yeah, I've done that with some of our just to some of our remote boxes that we have that we don't have added into Virtual Center. So,
well, that's a good point. The VMA, as well as if you're interested in doing, like, you know, scripted command line installs or whatever, that's definitely an option. You know, if you're at a point where you are, you know, seriously anti Windows, that might be a good option. I think for, like, you know, mainstream production use, okay, I think the lack of Update Manager coming on it natively is the biggest thinking point. I'm not going to say stopping point, but it's, you know, something to consider. But, you know, will we just, you know, avoid Windows altogether? I don't know. There might be a few companies that are 100% Starnix, I guess would be the right word. Non-Windows, but how about, you know, troubleshooting, right? That's the next thing. You know, when we diagnose logs, I've historically done most of my troubleshooting by the generate log bundles, and then within Windows, I'll look at the application log and the system log.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, though, the only time I go into the Windows or system log is usually to diagnose SQL Server issues, okay?
Yeah.
So within the product, the log bundle, which still is available on the VCSA, it might be a slightly different format of a log, but all that being said, the troubleshooting is something that, you know, would be a factor. I mean, how about your troubleshooting of vSphere? What do you usually do?
I come from a Linux environment, actually, so I probably would be a little more comfortable in their command line, just grepping through things and searching through things. But, it's hard to say. I mean, there's probably a lot of people that are going to be more comfortable within that Windows environment and Event Manager and looking at a lot of things in there. One of the things that the DB2 database that comes with it, I know nothing about DB2. So.
Good point. I know quite a bit about SQL Server.
Yeah.
So myself, I'm very comfortable deploying a new database. I'm very comfortable protecting it, and I'm very comfortable maintaining it, okay? Because that's along my background, which, oddly enough, my first job out of school was my primary responsibility was a firewall admin for a large network of BSD Unix firewalls, like way back in the day before people were doing firewalls. I didn't even know how cool it was when I was working on it, but I've since forgotten all that Unix stuff. That's the scary part. But, you know, the troubleshooting, you know, it would be kind of a good thing to make sure that you're, you know, capable of doing. But, you know, again, in the small environments, right, everything always works. That's the unfortunate part about piloting some things, you know.
Yeah.
You know, let's also compare to what the VCSA is trying to knock out. Have you ever used, do you use a shared database, or do you use a centralized database, or have you just moved it from one to the other?
Yeah, no, we use a, we have a centralized SQL Server that we have our vCenter database on.
Yeah, it's more comfortable for me. Yeah, you can get the admin tools for the SQL Express on the default install of vCenter, which will drop it in there, but
yeah.
What I've noticed is that once you hit that limit of hosts and hosts and VMs for that config, then it's kind of ugly to move beyond, right? And you actually run some data protection or some data corruption issues with that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that because I read it. I'm saying that because I went through it.
Yeah, I think there's some limitations on how big SQL Express can grow as well, isn't there?
I think it's a 4 gig data profile,
yeah.
But do not hold me to that. So, but no, so cool. I mean, I think that there's a lot of considerations, right? It comes down to what kind of database are you comfortable supporting, even though it's an appliance, right? The database is a factor. It's probably too early to say if it's less of a factor than SQL because of it being a canned appliance, but you know, it is a factor, and I guess updating it might be, if it like shows up on a security scan, on that would be something to consider. What about some of the other limitations? No linked mode, no IPv6, I think no vCenter Heartbeat. Does that, you roll your eyes over that, or what do you think?
Well, it doesn't necessarily affect me, but definitely some of the larger enterprises, it would definitely be a limiting factor. even though, yeah, you say it's only five hosts, I think, and 50 VMs that it supports, I think you can attach it to an Oracle database, like an external Oracle database, if you happen to have some Oracle licenses just laying around. So.
Well, see, and that, yeah, if it does support that, that just, to me, is that's a square peg round hole situation. Because,
yeah.
Well, you know what? I take that back. Because enterprise to one person is not enterprise to another, okay, right? So if I'm an organization, especially if I'm like a retail organization, for example, where I have a lot of stores, I may be an enterprise, and I may have large pockets of infrastructure that must be distributed throughout my environment. So
mm-hmm.
That would not at all be unheard of, maybe a whole bunch of two-host clusters to support a retail
yeah.
operation, right? So if you're looking for a, you know, a prototype, that might be very well within your profile. You keep the licensing costs down. You know, the updating, of course, would have to be something to address, and that might be one more Windows box versus two more compared to vCenter. But then again, I've frequently administered remote hosts over the wire just fine. I don't know if you've ever done that, meaning vCenter is over the WAN compared to the host, even though you're not really, really supposed to do that. I've done it all the time, and it works fine.
Yeah, we do have some hosts at remote, well, out at our schools that we manage through a centralized vCenter.
Yeah. So if you had huge expanse of small clusters, that might be a use case for the enterprise in the VCSA. But again, it might just make more sense to keep that central because link mode's not supported, right? Especially because then you've got these pockets of infrastructure you can't view on that beloved single pane of glass. So.
Yeah, and you're still looking at a vCenter license for each.
Oh yeah, true.
The VCSA as well. So.
Yeah, you're only knocking out the Windows license on the VM or physical server, I guess, if you still do that. But no, I mean, there's some concerns with it. I mean, I personally think it's great for the test dev lab. It's like you said, it's quick, ready to go, easy to use. And it's perfect for small environments, okay? So
yeah.
Is it ready for more than that? I can see some use cases, but I'm trying to, you know, make the use case fit the product, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But what about long term? I mean, we, of course, I don't have access to futures about the VCSA, but what's your kind of instinctive approach? I mean, do you like where it's going, that type of stuff?
Yeah, I can't see them not working on it in the future. I mean, I think they're going to continue, and probably Update Manager is going to be one of their biggest focuses, or that's probably what I would focus on. It seems to be getting talked about the most out there anyways, is the lack of support.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to round out the stack, right? If they're going this appliance model, and we've seen other things pop up, right? We've seen Zimbras pop up, and we've seen the VSA, the vSphere Storage Appliance, pop up. So we've seen this, dare I say, full stack, right? It's a full mm-hmm. solution coming up, and the natural conclusion is that the full solution would round out. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. I don't think the need for Update Manager is going to go away by any stretch of the definition, but, yeah, it's a lot better. In fact, I don't know if you've fully evacuated ESXi. I have. Or, I'm sorry, fully evacuated ESX. I'm fully migrated to ESXi. Where are you at on that?
Same deal, yeah. We upgraded around 8 or 9 months ago, just getting ready for the 5 release because we knew there was no more ESX. So.
Yeah, and that usually, especially nowadays, that's not too painful of an ordeal. What about the, you know what, I take that back. I do have one ESX host in my, my production environment is actually a lab, okay? I've blogged about it on the Veeam blog, but the SSA lab, which is for me, my production, I'm a large stakeholder in that group, but we also have one ESX host left in that lab, specifically for support reasons, okay?
So, yeah.
And the patch inventory, it's for real. I mean, I think I had 7 applicable patches on a you know, ISO to update host for ESX. I think it was in the 70s or 50s or something. So it's for real when they say that the patches are mainly for the, you know, that historical Red Hat platform. That's definitely the case, especially now. So, but no, it's not too big of a deal anymore. I haven't updated all the lab to vSphere 5 yet. Still working on some mechanical issues around that. How about vSphere 5? You already there and happy?
We are right in the middle of it, basically. So
in the middle. Did I interrupt you?
No. Okay. No, we're basically one cluster is done, and I'm just working on a second cluster, and that'll be it.
Awesome. Okay, well, hey, I'm going to transition to another part of the podcast, Mike, and I, again, appreciate you being on here tonight. This section of the podcast is called Three Views from You. So I'm going to ask you three questions. The first one will be set into the past. The next question will be set in the current time, and the last question will be set into the future. You've listened to this before, so you know how it goes. So let's start with the past, Mike. What's a cool story or experience in your technology or general IT experience that you can share with us from your past?
Well, I was thinking about this, and you know, I have a good one, but it's already been used, actually.
Hey, that's okay.
So I'll tell two, I guess. I'll just graze over the one that's already been used. But I was also involved in setting up some technology to talk to the International Space Station. So I can't remember who that was a while ago, but there was someone on here that...
I'm in trouble because I don't remember. Man, I'm going to have to do my homework. I do pay attention, but I have forgotten. It's late for me, so.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, tell me a little bit about that. Everybody likes stuff in the sky, man. Come on.
Well, it was just an assembly at one of the schools that I was working at in a previous job I had, which, basically just involved setting up shortwave radios and different pieces of technology, and students got to talk to the space station as it basically hovered on by, so.
Well, that's cool. Does the space station use nuclear power or at least little reactors? I know that, like, some of the satellites out there have, I don't want to call it nuclear, but they have, like, energy cells or something that are fueled off of that type of fuel, and they last forever because, you know, they, especially before they had solar, right, when they sent some of those old satellites up that were taking pictures and beaming them back, they needed a 50-year energy source. I don't know if you know anything about that.
No idea.
That's cool stuff, man. I think the ISS has some solar panels on it for sure, though. How about the other story? What's the other cool one you have?
Well, I'll take you back a whopping, I guess, 3 months, and just say my experience at VMworld. Basically, it was my first VMworld, and my first time really attending an IT conference to that sort of scale. I've been to lots, you know, where there's 500, 1,000 people, but never were they expecting 20,000 people. But that was a really great experience for me, you know. And I met a lot of people and made a lot of connections, and that's basically it. It was great.
Well, yeah, that's a big show to, you know, to go to for the, you know, I guess, you know, your other ones, 500, 1,000. That's a pretty decent size, but same for me. Nothing compares to VMworld. Right?
No.
I've been to some other events like, you know, Storage Networking World, Microsoft MMS, reaching here, Gartner Data Center stuff. VMworld's in a whole different world. And maybe it's the community. You know, that's a big part of it, right? Because that's one of the areas where I jump in and I am immediately in tune with all of the other profile attendees. Maybe that's just me, but... I feel right at home, if you will. How about in the current? What's going on that you have the most passion for right now or you're otherwise most interested in?
Well, you're kind of leading me into that. I was just going to talk about basically being part of the virtualization community that's out there right now. I mean, I'm finding it's a really tightly knit community. Everyone's always willing to help everyone and share different types of information. It's just basically participating in that and, you know, running the blog and throwing any information I have out there and just the conversations back and forth with everyone. It's that's really where I'm spending a lot of my spare time now, and it's kind of fun.
Oh, it's awesome. It is. Yeah. And, you know, well, I guess if you're listening to this podcast, other people out there, you're engaging. You really are in that level. But you know what? Take the next step. Get on Twitter. If you're not, you know, if you don't think you have the time to blog, get on Twitter. You know, be witty with your comments, right? That works too. There are so many channels in which we can engage. It's really a shame if you're missing out, because it is, it's really cool. But most importantly, I do believe there's business value in it. You can get answers to your questions. You can change your perspective and, you know, a whole bunch of aha moments, whatever you want. It's available in the community. That's a good thing. That's awesome.
You can end up on podcasts that you wouldn't normally be on.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I really don't discriminate too much on my guests, but I had one problem recently. I'll just not talk about that. How about into the future, Mike? What do you see coming down the pike that excites you the most, or you think will be a big change, a big deal, you know, longer term?
I'm kind of really excited to see where HTML5 and products like App Blast and that'll go. Just the ability to stream applications through nothing but a browser, it's pretty cool, and I think it's really going to change a lot of the end user devices and just a lot of things. It's being in education too, we have a lot of applications, and just to be able to manage them as a single application instead of an image and just push them out basically through AD or something like that, it's pretty neat. I'm kind of excited to see how that's going to play out. So.
Yeah, that's come up a number of times. I don't know if HTML5 or App Blast were mentioned, but you know that the device won't matter.
That's right.
But, you know, supporting a core technology like that'll do it. So, yeah, I think that'll be something to look out for going forward, because you know, we don't really want to be in the business of managing OSs, but you know, the level of detail that we used to have to do for that, I think, is on the decline. And in my own practice, that's the case. I still manage OSs, but I manage less of it. You know, so mm-hmm. will there be a watershed moment where something like, you know, HTML5? You know, takes it to the next level. That's probably not too far away. Good prediction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hey, again, mwpreston.net, mwpreston on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Rick Vanover. Mike, I do appreciate you taking the time out to be on the podcast tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been great.